usually it's not discussed, but I think this weekend we saw how Intel support, even if it's for a goal that I think is nominally, quite something that's difficult to dispute, which is rescuing hostages, can nonetheless contribute to operations that kill what looks like a very large number of civilians. And I think it's also indicative of the value of the Intel support that we give Israel. And I just highlight that because that's the area that I worked in or adjacent to, and it's another form of valuable support that we give Israel that helps them prosecute this war. And it's another less discussed form of leverage that we also have over the Israeli government.
And Harrison, man, I'm wondering your moral concerns about what was going on in Gaza, to what extent you shared it with other fellow military or defense intelligence people, and what advice you would have to those in the military or in the intelligence community that are still grappling with their ethical concerns.
So for the first months after I initiated my resignation process, which did not actually conclude until last week, I was really kind of afraid. I didn't feel comfortable talking about this with anybody because nobody else was discussing it. And it felt like it was way outside of our norms and outside of what would be culturally acceptable where I worked. But in April, when I finally shared my resignation letter with my office, I got really overwhelmingly positive and supportive feedback from the people that I worked with. And I discovered that there were a lot of people who felt pretty much the same way that I did and also felt like they could not openly discuss their concerns. And since I've publicized my letter, more people from both my office and elsewhere in the Department of Defense and the military have also reached out. And, my number one piece of advice or kind of tough love here is understanding again that nobody is going to tell you to stop. I do not think we are near an end to this conflict. And so you are nowhere near the end of being finally told that you can stop participating in it. And so understanding that, you then have to realize that moderating your level of support or participation is a choice, the same way that going to work tomorrow and continuing to support the Israeli campaign is a choice. And I know that what I did is not feasible for a lot of people. I understand that. I know other folks in our line of work who have asked for a transfer or who have asked their supervisor, hey, I'm going to keep doing all of the portfolios you give me, but find somebody else for Israel. I think another possibly effective option is asking for an assurance in writing that what you're doing is both legal and consistent with your organization's ethical standards and value statements. That's something I wish I had done, which I think would have given some people pause because we're asking each other, we're asking our subordinates to do a lot of these things and contribute to this conflict without really pausing to think about the ethical dimension. And that's something I'm guilty of as well.
Harrison, man,
Go ahead. I would just finally say if you can't do that, just start talking about it and letting somebody that you work with know that they're not alone might be incredibly valuable in and of itself.
We just have 10 seconds. What effect did the protests have on you? Do they make it inside?
The campus protests?
Yes.
It was further indication about whether or not I was on the right side of history and, how I'd be able to look back at this years from now, which is what helped drive my decision.
Harrison Mann, Jewish American, U.S. Army major, recently resigned from the Defense Intelligence Agency over the Biden administration's policy in Gaza. That does it for our show. To see others who have resigned our interviews, go to democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
firefighters and emergency responders are volunteers. There's no typical firefighter. Anyone can volunteer to serve their community. Volunteering as a first responder is really about having the heart and drive to make a difference where it's needed most. Your community needs you. Are you ready to answer the call? Learn more and find local volunteer opportunities at makemeafirefighter.org.
You are listening to 88.3 FM WRCT Pittsburgh and online at wrct.org.
Right with petition. I have this philosophy. Is your life worth the pain in? Is this girl versus boy with different symbol? Being born is power. Scout leader, not detect this big sin. Your risk changed me hostage. Me, I'm fighting with my head. I'm not ambiguous. I must look like a dork. Me, naked with textbooks. Dig this big crux. Organizing the Boy Scouts for murder is wrong. 10 years beyond a big sweat point. Man, it was still there ever without you. Coming back around, look, we're coming together for just a second. A peek, a guess. At the wholeness, it's way too big. At the wholeness, it's way too big.
Questions, don't mean what you say. Immaculate protection, played out. guys don't wear white. Don't wear white. Good guys, bad guys, which is which? The white collar worker or the digger in the ditch? Man, who's to say who's a better man? I'm always doing the best I can. Best I can. You thought I had a dirty mind. All the messed up chicks of the changing times. White filth and easy living. You can't come close to the love that I've given to tell your mama and your papa. Sometimes good guys don't wear white. They don't wear white. They don't wear.
Celebrating. official stats to at least just give us a clue. Ah, here it comes. I know it's someone I knew. Teenage riot in a public station. Gonna fight and tear it up in a hibernation for you. Now I see it. I think I'll leave it out of the way. Now I come near you. It's not clear what you make the way. Looking for a ride to your secret location. Maybe Jesus setting up a peace mediation for you. Got a foghorn and a drum and a hammer that's rocking, and a cord and a pedal and a lock that'll do you for now. It better work out. I hope it works out my way. Cause it's getting kind of quiet in my city head. It takes a teenage riot to get me out of bed right now. You better look it. We're gonna shake it up to him. Max the hero, he paint a zero on his hand.
to eye you, but I've seen too much to try you. It's always weirdness why you dig it much too much to fry you. The weirdness flows between us, anyone can tell to see us. Freak scenes can't believe us, or can it just be cool and free us?
Kids, it's Krusty the Clown. You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. All right, where's my money? What? Chintzy college stations.
WRCT, in sound, from way out.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, in 2023, the California legislature passed laws that said big corporations doing business in the state have to tell the public, investors, how much pollution they're emitting throughout their supply chain. It's knowable information, and people have a right to know it, right? The same way restaurants here in New York City have to tell potential customers how they did on their last health inspection. You can eat there or not, but at least you're making an informed decision. But no, this past January, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and a bunch of other industry groups challenged those California laws because they said making companies disclose the impact of their actions, in this case their emissions, would force them to publicly express a, quote, speculative, non-commercial, controversial, and politically charged message, close quote. That, they said, makes the laws a pressure campaign aimed at shaping company behavior. Unfortunately, some courts are indulging this bizarre notion that regulation should be illegal, essentially, because it forces companies to say stuff they'd rather not say. Fortunately, other courts are calling this self-serving nonsense self-serving nonsense. But it's not just a legal matter. Public information, our right to know, is also on the line here. So we should know what's going on. Catherine Lee addresses this issue in a recent piece for The Lever, where she's editorial fellow. We'll hear from her this week on Counterspin. Counterspin listeners will likely know about what's been called the right-wing media machine. It started, you could say, with ideologues and politicians with ideas, generally ideas about how to hurdle us back to at least the 19th century, legally and culturally. They then created think tanks and funded academics to polish up and promulgate those ideas, and they created and funded media outlets to push those ideas out. It's not, in other words, a reflection of a fortuitous coming together of like-minded individuals, but an echo chamber forged with the explicit purpose of maximizing a narrow viewpoint into a false consensus. The news article you read, after all, cites a professor and a pundit and a think tank and a guy on the street who read a thing, so it looks like multiple disparate sources who happen to agree. Something analogous is happening now with corporations claiming the First Amendment says they don't have to comply with regulations they don't want to comply with because those regulations reflect ideas that are quote-unquote controversial and they can't be compelled to take a public position on a controversial idea, like, for example, that climate disruption is real. It's a weird, important maneuver, at once complicated and pretty simple, and it's usefully unpacked in a recent piece by our guest. Catherine Lee is an editorial fellow at The Lever, where the piece, Corporations Are Weaponizing Free Speech to Wreck the World, appears. She joins us now by phone from Oakland, California. Welcome to Counterspin, Catherine Lee.
Oh, hi, Janine. Very happy to be here, and let's unpack this complicated piece.
Well, before we get to its current, you could say, artful employment, what is the compelled speech doctrine under the First Amendment? What do we think was the point of it when it was adopted?
Well, as with the First Amendment, the compelled speech in the First Amendment, the original purpose is to say that the government cannot force people to say something they disagree with. That is perhaps illustrated in a very early compelled speech case that basically says that students do not have to stand up in school and salute the flag or salute the national anthem if they don't want to. Basically, it is to protect people from things that the government is forcing them to do, and that it's kind of to insulate people from government policies that imposes things on them. The original intention, I do not believe, and the experts I have interviewed for this story do not believe that the intention is for corporates to use such an argument in lawsuits.
All right. Well, then let me just move on to asking you to please lay out for us what you call, in the lead to this informative piece for thelever.com, the novel legal strategy that some corporations are now pioneering, you say, which sounds very different than relying on. You know, they're kind of trying to make something new here. Explain what you're seeing.
So traditionally, like I've just mentioned, it is to protect people from the government imposing things on them. But what is considered as speech has really exploded when it comes to the corporate landscape. Are tax returns and contracts considered speech? What does that mean for our government's power to look into financial wrongdoing and prevent tax fraud and prevent money laundering if all of those things are considered as speech and that the government cannot force anybody to, quote unquote, say and disclose such information? So the corporates have definitely spotted that. And they have been trying to argue that these financial documents are considered as speech. So it started with drug pricing. It starts with the Corporate Transparency Act, that once there's a precedent in the court system that says these things are considered speech, more cases are being invited and more cases are coming in this specific landscape. So basically, they are saying that these things are considered speech, and therefore the government cannot compel them to disclose this information. And at first, it starts with financial information. Mm-hmm. And right now, we're seeing that in Medicare drug negotiations, it is also happening. These commercial speeches are, according to the lawyers and experts I have spoken to, they don't believe that these things should be considered as speech. They don't believe that these so-called commercial speech should be afforded the same amount of protection as traditional political expression, for example, like protesting or writing something in the media, mm-hmm. or being censored or being prevented or being forced to make a certain political expression in the non-commercial sense. So that is why in the article and according to my experts, they believe this is a new strategy that corporates are basically exploiting this argument in order to bring more and more cases and expand the definition of what speech is.
Right. So then they seem as though they are complying with a law or relying on a law rather than sort of forging this new way. Well, I think the examples really bring it home for people what's happening here. And there are a number of those examples in the piece, and each one is more disturbing and illuminating than the last. But one key one is California has a new emissions disclosure law that major companies doing business in California have to make public how much pollution they're emitting throughout their supply chain. And we can understand why that's important, because a company can say, well, our home office is zero emissions, you know, and that's great. But what about your factories? You know, what's happening there?
Mm-hmm.
So the public needs this information. This is information that the public is looking for to kind of get through the PR that these companies, fossil fuel companies in this case, might be putting out. And they're saying, no, we don't need to comply with an emissions disclosure law because that's speech. I mean,
that is precisely what is happening. And the thing is, these emissions laws, they target companies with annual revenue above $1 billion.
Mm-hmm.
That is not asking like our local coffee shop or the marketplace around the corner to figure out how much emissions in their supply chain. It only really applies to large companies, especially oil companies, very large agricultural factory farming companies. So what initially caught my eye in the story is actually the arguments they have in the complaints that they filed, mm-hmm. against the emission disclosures law. It is actually the complaint, if you read it very closely, to anybody with common sense, it almost sounds ridiculous. Some of the arguments are saying that they fear that disclosing their emissions would allow activists, nonprofits, and lawmakers to single out companies for investigation, which to me is just another word for accountability. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what our nonprofits and lawmaking agencies, it's what they're supposed to do, investigate and help create policies that can improve lives. So to me, it sounds like their effort to avoid accountability is very thinly veiled. If you look at their complaint very closely, they also complain that this law will be compelling them to change their behavior. They complain that this law is changing and shaping their behavior, when in reality, isn't that what any laws and regulations are supposed to do?
Right.
I mean, in any daily life law, laws such as, like, hey, you cannot jaywalk, that is aiming to shape our behaviors. It's aiming to change our behaviors. So if you read the complaint closely, their efforts to avoid accountability is honestly very thinly veiled. And it is, in a way, further expanding what is considered as speech. And also the whole circulatory argument that climate change is somehow controversial. I also looked into the threshold of what could be considered as controversial when I first read their complaint. Mm-hmm. So then the lawyers I was talking to, the question I brought to them was, how low is the threshold to prove that something is scientifically controversial? And it turns out my instincts were kind of correct, that the threshold of that is extremely low. They just have to prove that there's a dissenting opinion. They don't really have to prove that it is scientifically sound, and there's no one to really check that.
So it's just laid in the lap of particular courts or particular decision makers. And it sounds as though they're saying, particularly with that low threshold or that very vague, indetermined threshold, that any regulation, because any regulation is about shaping behavior, it sounds like any regulation they can dispute because it's aimed at asking them to do something different. I mean, am I misreading that, or is it really anti any regulation whatsoever in some way?
In some way, that's what it sounds like, because if the complaint is about changing the shaping behavior, any regulations, that's the point of it, changing behavior. And what is so wrong? Even, yes, it is about changing the shaping behavior, but what could be so wrong about forcing someone to lower their emissions at this point? It sounds like they're saying that they shouldn't lower their emissions because either climate change doesn't matter enough or that climate change is not real. Like they said, they think it's controversial.
Right, right. Well, just in case folks don't understand, and of course we'll send them to thelever.com to read the piece, but you also have a food distribution and a restaurant supplies company, Sysco, that's saying that you can't force companies to read out notices of labor violations to workers because they don't want to. They don't want to make that information available. And if they talk about labor violations in the workplace, well, that's a confession of sins, and they shouldn't be forced to do that. So this can reach into pretty much any area of our life, yeah?
Yeah, definitely. Especially, well, companies argue that if there has been a labor dispute, whatever the result is of that dispute, the company would post a sign somewhere in the facility, basically detailing the labor violation. But it doesn't really achieve the same effect as reading it out in front of everybody, because it's a difference between passively posting a sign somewhere and, you know, actively informing people what happened. And obviously, if a company has labor violations, they likely don't want their workers to know. And if workers have also suffered the same violation, like if the company reads it out, they might become more aware of it.
Right. Well, it's funny because, and if by funny we mean perverse, because the narrative of capitalism that we often hear is that it relies on everyone being an informed economic actor, you know, an individual actor who is making economic choices based on knowledge. And here we have corporations actively trying to reduce the available amount of information that a person could have to make decisions about what to buy or where to work or anything like that. It's kind of it's weird. This is how corporate capitalism subverts this notion that we hear about capitalism 101 and building a better mousetrap and all of that sort of thing.
Definitely. Well, part of about the emissions case, part of their complaint is also that they might be more susceptible to boycotts. I do believe that in this day and age, especially people of the younger generations, they're much more aware of climate change, and a lot of times they would choose companies and products based on their perception of whether that company is being socially responsible enough. So it's obvious that a lot of corporates have caught up on that, and they're now afraid that if they disclose how much they're actually emitting, people are going to stop buying from them. They're actually afraid that this information is going to get out and impact their profits, so that a lot of times their greenwashing or disinformation isn't going to work anymore, because there will be a real concrete number for people to go on, and a number they cannot fake. Mm-hmm. They could put on their website all they want that, like, we have this commitment in 10 years, we have this kind of green commitment, we're going to become zero emission by 2030. They could say what they want to say on their website. But once there's a concrete number out there, none of that is going to work anymore. And they're really afraid of that, clearly.
Yeah, afraid of an informed public. Well, this only works with a certain kind of judicial landscape, right? I mean, you have to count on not getting laughed out of court with what looks to many people like a fairly transparent shenanigan. But obviously, they believe that for some reason, courts are going to be open to this particular kind of argument.
Yes, unfortunately, multiple times courts have been open to this particular argument. And in terms of science, in California, the well-known case would be the Monsanto case. Mm-hmm. For everyone who doesn't know, Monsanto is a pesticide company. They make this herbicide called Roundup, and there is a certain chemical in it where a lot of international scientists have said that it could potentially cause cancer in humans. So because, you know, science is never 100% and that knowledge is constantly evolving, there is a loophole for them to say that there is contradicting science. And as we have later found out, Monsanto, the company, have also commissioned scientific studies to say that their product is safe. And in California, that stood up in court because the court doesn't really look at whether or not Monsanto have engineered this controversy that they're claiming. And this argument was allowed to pass the California Proposition 65, which requires a warning label for a whole host of chemicals that could be cancerous and cause birth defects. Monsanto would not have to put that label on their specific herbicide product because this whole scientific controversy thing was allowed to stand up in court. So the consequences of that is now this argument was kind of expanded. It's not just one chemical anymore. It's the entire mechanism of climate change that is being brought to question. But the good news here is that sometimes courts are also beginning to hold the line, and recently there have been some positive developments. If you look at the most recent case of the Medicare drug negotiations under the Inflation Reduction Act, I believe it is the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and different pharmaceutical companies, they were arguing that the Medicare drug negotiations, that the Inflation Reduction Act is trying to compel them to agree with a government-determined price, and that they're saying that is compelled speech. So they have brought that point to multiple federal courts, including most recently, I believe, a federal court in Ohio. And these courts have fortunately rejected this argument, basically blocked the case on multiple occasions. So I do believe that courts are becoming aware of that and that they're beginning to curb these arguments, because in the past, when they have allowed these arguments to pass, sometimes likely in the next case, the argument becomes expanded.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I was going to push you further on that in terms of, it sounds like courts are cottoning on and pushing back. Are there other policy or legislative responses that seem appropriate here, or is it mainly a matter for the courts? And then do you have thoughts about, because I have not seen this in other reporting, do you have other thoughts about what media might do in terms of disclosing this, kind of putting some sunlight on this as part of a pushback against what seems clearly like a anti-regulatory, anti-public information kind of effort?
Well, to answer the first question, I do believe this matter is mainly up to the courts, even though in terms of lawmaking, there can be laws that make up for what the courts are not doing. Mm-hmm. At the end of the story that I wrote about this, I mentioned a doctrine called the major questions doctrine. A lot of times, what the states are allowed to do and what the states are allowed to regulate, what the federal agencies are allowed to regulate in states, is significantly limited. So a lot of times, these things become left up to courts in a mm-hmm. major case to basically make a decision on whether what the individual states are doing is lawful or not. I believe that if the federal regulatory agencies oftentimes could have more power to pass more scrutiny regulations on these things, and that federal regulatory agencies could have more power to fight these law cases if they are sued on a particular point, for example, like the Inflation Reduction Act, I believe that federal agencies should be given more power to decide instead of leaving it up to the courts, because the court doesn't always hold the line. They're beginning to, but for example, like the California emissions disclosure case, it's still very much up in the air, and it's an entirely new regulation. No other states have implemented it yet. It's just California. And there are no federal regulations on how companies could be more accountable for the emission they're putting out. Right. And in terms of how media could report on this, I would say a lot of times, this type of stories, it's very, very helpful to talk to lawyers, because a lot of the cases that I have found, and also trying to figure out how low the scientific threshold is to basically prove that something is controversial, the lawyers know. They are like a treasure trove of past cases, because that is their job. And a lot of times, they really enjoy talking to journalists, laying out their cases, and basically walking you through the steps and loopholes that's in our law, because that is their profession. I would also say I can understand that sometimes it's hard to write about something that doesn't have a main human character in it. Sometimes it's right. hard to make it interesting, and it could be easy to overlook these stories. But personally, I think that even a seemingly boring document could contain very interesting information. For example, the initial complaint that's filed against the California emissions disclosure law. If you look at the information closely, it might look like a boring document, but the more you read, you're like, wow, this doesn't make sense. Am I hallucinating this, or is this real? So then you go to a lawyer and verify that information. Like, is this a trend I'm spotting? Is this a problem? Do you think it's a problem? And these kind of stories could end up being very interesting. And I would say that also it's important to look into lobbying data and kind of frame the story looking at who is responsible and not only looking at what the problem is. I feel like stories could become much more powerful when you look at the how, the mechanism, that's the larger mechanism that's at work, instead of only focusing on one specific event or one isolated event that's happening. Sometimes when the more people, the more professionals you talk to, you kind of start to see a network and a storyline and how there's a loophole and how can it, the mechanism of how things work behind the scenes.
Absolutely. Well, that's excellent. We'll end it there for now. We've been speaking with Catherine Lee. She's editorial fellow at The Lever, online at thelever.com, where you can find this informative article, Corporations Are Weaponizing Free Speech to Wreck the World, that we've been talking about. Thank you so much, Catherine Lee, for joining us this week on Counterspin.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is brought to you by the Media Watch Group FAIR, based in New York. If you missed part of today's show, you can hear shows and transcripts on our website, fair.org. The show is engineered by Riley Baer. I'm Janine Jackson. Thanks for listening to Counterspin.
WRCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1940.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Hello, my fellow Americans. I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
WRCT.
WRCT.
Pittsburgh.
We
own
everything.
And your soul is next.
We don't actually have the legal documentation to back that up.
Yeah.
As well, kind of the only thing left to do. Oh, we ain't giving up, we're just changing our stuff, adding a little twang to this brew.
Well, I'm a trading this old axe
for some steel. I'm tired of playing it fast. Let's get real. Find some Georgia pine, settle down. Cause we're sick and tired of hearing them loud guitars. We dig the Nashville sound. We're going country, that's our style. We're going country for a while. I don't care if you're listening. I don't give a damn what you think of it. We're going country. We're going country. Tried flamenco, well, that really stank though. The truth be told, we really blew. Lord knows we tried Celtic, but them faces weren't metal too. When all was said and done, man, we should have been through. Well, now I might as well get up and go to work. Trade this old guitar for a time shirt. Dedicated my life to the Lord. And there's one damn thing I surely know. I really hate rock and roll. We're going country, and that's our style. We're going country for a while. I don't care if you're listening. I don't give a damn what you think of it. We're going country. We're going country. Changing our shit. Say, why don't you bring me down that bottle over here and I'll tell you a little story. Cause I'm gonna look like a goddamn son of a Sam. Really hate rock and roll. We're going country. That's our style. We're going country for a while. I don't care if you're listening. I don't give a hoot what you think of it.
Thank you.